Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time to get all the info you need on the Vanderbilt Commodores. This is the Anchor Down Podcast with Vanderbilt reporter Max Hurd.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, Max.
On Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
And the Game Nashville app.
It's time to anchor down. And listen up to the Anchor Down Podcast here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Last show of April. It's Thursday, April 29th. No player interview this week because the Commodores are on the road getting set to take on the Florida Gators this weekend in another ranked matchup. Vandy will be at Florida at 6 Central on Friday on ESPNU, 5:30 Central on Saturday, online only on SEC Network Plus, then 2 o'clock Central Time on Sunday. That game will be on ESPN2 for the series finale. Speaking of ESPN, we got Clinton Yates on the show today. Clinton works for ESPN. You see him a lot as a panelist on Around the Horn on ESPN. His primary work is as a columnist for The Undefeated, which is one of ESPN's websites, which writes about sports, race, culture, historically black colleges, and more. He is a big college baseball fan, a big Vanderbilt baseball fan, a big Kumar Rocker, Christian Little fan. And we talk a lot about college baseball, what makes the Vanderbilt program special, and what makes Vanderbilt special within the context of what Clinton covers with The Undefeated, race and sports, how that plays into Vanderbilt, how that plays into individuals like Kumar Rocker, and so much more. We'll also talk about the Major League Baseball and USA Baseball Dream Series, which those two organizations host together every winter. For high school level baseball players, predominantly African American from all across the U.S., the majority of whom are pitchers and catchers, and Kumar Rocker and Christian Little have both been a part of that event. Clinton has been covering it since its inception about half a decade ago, and I love his point of view on all of this. Stay tuned after the interview. We got some serious baseball talk about Kumar Rocker's velocity dip in his starts against LSU and Missouri. By the way, Clinton was at his start against LSU, and we'll talk about it a little bit in this interview. But since then, Rocker's velocity has been back. This week I asked him why. You'll hear his answer coming up right after the interview with Clinton Yates, plus a double dose, because I missed it on Monday's show and I feel bad, of the Tim Corbin quote of the week. You can subscribe to the Anchor Down Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. Clinton Yates is on the program. Clinton, thanks so much for doing this.
Anytime, sir. I'm overlooking the Malibu Mountains right now, and the birds are chirping, a.k.a. tweet are real.
That's awesome out there in L.A. You guys know Clinton as a columnist from The Undefeated and also as a panelist on TV for Around the Horn, but he loves college baseball. Clinton, where does your love of college baseball come from?
You know, I think it comes from the fact that when I grew up playing college baseball was something that was just the next level to me. You know, I played Little League. I was on my all-star team. I played football. I played RBI. And, like, if my situation had been one that was going to allow me to, you know, move to the next level, it wasn't. I mean, you know, we can talk about my talent. That's not really an issue. But the point is that, like, it was always the next level that I just looked at where I was like, oh, this is where the fun guys play. You know what I mean? The bigs was always a completely different thing to me. I'm from D.C. and big league team until I was 24. It didn't mean I didn't like baseball. It just meant that the levels of the game that I enjoyed were, you know, the youth game and not even necessarily the minor league game, but just like, you know, guys you know play in high school and they play in college. That's it, you know? And so from there, you know, play in the center third. It's just, to me, it's, you know, baseball sort of the ultimate team game and the ultimate individual game. And college baseball embodies so much of that and just what it is because you don't have all the scholarships, you don't have all the TV money. It's a lot different now than it used to be, but guys are legitimately just kind of playing baseball, you know, and yeah, that's fun to watch.
Well, couldn't agree more on all those things, and you have an extremely large platform now between your web writing and, of course, your Twitter, but also being on TV on Around the Horn. Why does it matter to you that college baseball gets not only attention in general, but your attention and your publicity?
I think it's because a lot of people, from what they understand of the ecosystem of sports, they look at things from the top down, so they see the top flight. And they assume, and the top flight works for any league. We're talking NFL, MLB, NBA, even the National Hockey League, where you think, okay, well, the guys who got there sort of like on merit or on, you know, sort of obvious talent and deserved, you know, attribution. But that's not always how it works, you know, and in baseball in particular, because it's the oldest sport in America and thus the most conservative. And, you know, a lot of people play it at a lot of lower levels. You got to take a look at those levels. You know, you got to see what people are doing if you actually care about the sport. People ask me all the time, oh, you love baseball. Who's your favorite team? I'm like, I like baseball well beyond just the big leagues.
Right.
You know, and that's because I've seen the people play and you know what goes into it. You know how it is. You're traveling to different places, the coaches, the everybody's, all these people involved in what makes baseball go have way more to do with than anything than just the players, you know? And that's kind of, I think, where I think the college baseball shines, is that you look at, I wrote a story last month about Dylan Smith. He throws for the Alabama Crimson Tide. And, you know, his mama, his grandmama, and his great-grandmama show up to his games. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the kind of stuff that you can't make up. You know what I mean? And you don't really think about those kind of things when guys get to the bigs because they've been, you know, toiling forever in the bus leagues or, you know, they were phenoms that shot straight there. But, like, you know, that's the kind of stuff, the real stories about real people are kind of why I like it. And a lot of dreams end in college baseball, but it doesn't mean that they weren't, you know, realized on some level on the field before that ended.
That article you just referenced, for those who want to read it, titled The Real Deal's Roots Run Deep in Alabama on the Undefeated. And looking forward to hopefully seeing Dylan Smith pitch against Vandy a couple weeks from now, which will be a lot of fun.
Let me tell you something about Dylan. Dylan's got the stuff, you know, and I'm not just saying that because I wrote about it, but you know how it is. You see guys throw,
yeah.
Like, some dudes are just long-haired fireballers. Other people have the mechanics that can make you a pro. Whether that makes you a big leaguer or not, who knows? You know, I don't like putting those kind of, you know, sights or limits on people, but he's got pro stuff, you know, and you love to see that develop no matter who it is. And that's why it was fun to see him throw, because he likes the game for a good reason. He comes from a program as a little kid called the Houston Monarchs down in Texas, you know, ends up getting to Alabama. You know, kid's got a lot of swag. You know, he's got his whole team and his coach is dressing up. It's just, you know, this is the fun part. You know, this is what we like about the game. So I was happy to be there, happy to meet them, and happy to, you know, document his journey.
I do want to see Brad Bohannon's outfit, by the way. I can't wait to see that when they come to town.
So, Brad is a nice guy. Like, you know what I mean? I was like, yo, you talk to a lot of baseball coaches, and, you know, not really getting too far into the chalk talk, but, like, a lot of baseball coaches are super hardos, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, necessarily want to have a longer conversation with him than you want to have. Brad's not that guy, man. He's fun. He was obviously about it, so I was glad to talk to him. He's got a good program down there.
That's awesome. We're talking to Clinton Yates from the Undefeated and Around the Horn. And, Clinton, let's talk about this Vanderbilt team. What has stood out to you within this Vanderbilt program, especially through your lens as someone who writes about diversity and racial issues in sports?
I think one of the things that stood out to me about this program is that it has taken a while for people to realize what's been building there for many years, you know, and now that it's here, nobody Indy boys is acting like it's anything new, you know, and that to me is kind of, I don't want to say super important, but it says a lot about the commitment, because a lot of times you get programs where you're like, oh, you got my guy, sweet, awesome, and you're like, okay, and that player happens to be super talented, but if you look at how Tim's run his program, Tim Corbin, you know, you're like, dude, this is a part of, you know, like, not who you are, but what you do, you know, and that is something that's noticeable. You know, you go all the way back to the David Prices of the world, you know, people forget that the reason why Marcus Lynn Betts, the best player in the major leagues as far as I'm concerned right now, was going to consider going to Vanderbilt, you know, and the reason why he didn't go is because his boy, Tony Kemp, was the freshman of the year ahead of him, and he was going to play, you know, so he goes to the pros. Like, this is real life stuff, you know, and that's all a part of that program. And I remember the first time I went there to the field, we're talking three-plus calendar years ago, where I was like, oh, okay, I see what's happening. You know what I mean? Like, this is just plain fun, and that's always what matters to me. And they've done it the right way. So, you know, it was good to see them play against LSU. LSU had a down weekend. They kind of blew them out for, you know, a couple different days in a row because some things went wrong. But, like, dude, there's nothing not to like, you know, as far as I'm concerned. If you want to look at a program that's going to be representing what college baseball is, you know, I'm not saying that everybody's doing everything the exact right way in terms of, like, what athletics are in collegiate sports, but Vandy baseball is a tremendous product as far as I'm concerned in terms of what you're going to invest in your time and what you get back, man. They're doing it right.
Yeah, and you mentioned how Tim Corbin likes to construct his roster, in his words, to look like the United States of America, both geographically and racially and things like that. What did you make of the spotlight all that received last year, or 2 years ago now, in the College World Series Finals, when it was Vanderbilt with their team and Michigan and Eric Backich from the Tim Corbin coaching tree who coached his team and constructed his team in the same way, and those two came together for the title?
That was solid, and I think it was one of those things where, again, you don't necessarily have to celebrate everything as the pinnacle of achievement. Mm-hmm. It was just one of those things where when you're building, this is how you get to the peak of the pyramid, and that was a part of that, and probably what I'll just call the middle. You know what I mean? Because getting Kamara to Vanderbilt off the rip was probably one of the larger boons we've seen in college baseball recruiting writ large. You know what I mean? Never mind anything having to do with black players. And so when you saw all that build, Kamara throws a friggin' no-no at home, but technically on the road against Duke when they tried to stun him with the, you know, like, that's the kind of stuff, again, you can't make that up. You know what I mean? And, like, the moments that happened in between to get there were just as good as the achievement at the end. And that's the part that I try to tell people about. I'm like, yo, watch the baseball. You know what I'm saying? If you like the sport, that's the fun part. Like, you don't just have to talk about sort of the achievements of the rosters. If you like the game, you can see what's actually happening, and it's more fun. Like, that's what I'm here for, to watch the games and watch these guys play. And it's great, man. It's, you know, it's what I'm living. You know, it's who I am.
We're talking to Clinton Yates from ESPN's The Undefeated and Around the Horn about Vanderbilt baseball here on the Anchor Down podcast. You mentioned how much you love watching Kamara Rocker, the no-hitter, the pinnacle of his freshman year, and now this season he's right back on top of college baseball, really where he should be. What do you make of the way he carries himself when he pitches? You've tweeted a couple of times about different ways he's exhibited his blackness while he pitches, and also just how he wants to be a future face of the sport.
I mean, to me, Kamara, you know, first time I met Kamara, he was 15. It was at Dream Series, and he might have been 16, but, like, it was like, okay, this guy's a pro. And I mean that in terms of, you know, what the scouts write down on the board is makeup. You know, the guy knew he was a star. He's a dude, as we like to say in, you know, sort of non-professional professional parlance. And that, to me, is sort of half the battle, you know, because, again, for a guy like Corbin, who's got to manage trying to win an SEC title, trying to perhaps win a College World Series, and managing careers is mega difficult. And for anybody, I don't care if you're black, I don't care what you look like, to be able to manage, this coach has to have my interest in regard, and I'm going to be able to develop as a player. I give Kamara a lot of credit because they won it early. Like, he does not have anything to prove in SEC baseball, pardon my French, you know what I mean? And, like, he still goes out there and gives it what he has. And that, to me, is the most impressive thing about sort of not just him, but the program overall, is that they're still competing, you know, and that's why you go to college when you're that kind of a talent, is you want to learn how to compete. And if anybody's figured that out, man, I mean, it's fun. You know, you watch them play, and there's a lot of programs in the SEC that are really getting after it. I get that. But to me, right now, they're all chasing Vanderbilt, and I don't think that's an insult to any other program in the conference, never mind the country.
You pointed out one of my favorite moments of the entire season in week two back on February 28th. When Rocker balked and then just pointed the guy from second to third. That was a classic Rocker moment.
Right. He was like, all right, bro. He was like, all right, get on with it. You know,
you got me.
One of those things where he was like, right. He was like, you got me. It was one of those things where, again, these are the kind of things that I tell people all the time. If in your larger diet of baseball, all you're digesting is the bigs, you're not getting moments like that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And that's one of those things that at the lower levels of the game that are just, again, they're just more fun. Like, if you've played baseball growing up or if you've been around baseball players growing up, that's the stuff that makes it. It's not just the homers and the web gems and the strike call. Like, whatever, man. That's all cool and all. But, like, that little interstitial sort of stuff, that's what makes baseball what it is. And that was such a funny moment. He's like, aye. And then he raised the eye, oh, and then he struck out the next guy in the inning. He was like walked off in a case strut as if the previous moment had never even happened. It was hilarious. I loved it.
That's incredible. Clinton Yates is on the podcast from The Undefeated and ESPN's Around the Horn. You mentioned the Dream Series. This is an event that Major League Baseball started, I believe, in 2017, if that's right. Forgive me if I'm wrong on that.
It might be 16, but okay. Yeah, you're there.
So you and L. Duncan hosted a show last summer on ESPN Radio called The Intersection, talking about race and other similar topics within the sports world during COVID, at a time when those topics were especially with no games going on, reigning supreme in the sports world. And you guys had a great baseball conversation with Dell Matthews, who's one of Gary Matthews' sons, who is a vice president of baseball development for Major League Baseball, about the value of the Dream Series and helping develop non-white pitchers and catchers in the sport of baseball. What is the Dream Series like for you to see it, and why is what they do so important?
The Dream Series, and I can say this now as a 40-year-old man, I was not that old when I first went, was a dream come true on a certain level. Mm-hmm. You know, for a kid like me that grew up playing baseball in a city that did not have a big league team, but you did your best to develop outside of the typical systems that we find, you know, like seeing that, not just in terms of the specificity of the battery, which I'll get to in a second, but in terms of like, yo, they pick those kids. Those kids don't pay. Their families come, and it is there for them. That is a huge part of the battle when we talk about the pay-to-play versus otherwise development situations in this country. And I do not knock the pay-to-pay system. This is America, okay? The pay-to-play system will always exist. It doesn't mean it has to be the only system, and that's where I think things like the Dream Series come into play. Now, more specifically, towards the context of, like, pitchers and catchers developing, yo, you know, it's the same extension of the same things people have thought about us forever. We're not smart enough to do the smart things when it comes to also playing sports. If we can gather and develop and understand who we are, and you've got guys like Charles Johnson, one of the best catchers in big league history, who everybody forgets about, you know what I'm saying? Guys like Lenny Webster, who was a backup catcher for the Twins, who literally was not a catcher until he got to pro baseball and figured it out on his own. You got guys like Marvin Freeman, you know, who pitched for the Rockies and the Braves, more famously, for years. That's the kind of instruction that you just can't buy, you know, on a basic level. And for me, just seeing all those people in the same space, being able to communicate their baseball selves, their identities, never mind instruct, yo, that's invaluable, man. You know what I mean? That's what people like me grew up thinking was cool, you know? Like, my favorite players back in the day were not superstars. You know, they just weren't. You know, Sean Dunston and Gary Sheffield are my two favorite baseball players of all time, you know, and that matters to me because we got to believe that we can all just play regular positions, for lack of a better term. And mm-hmm. Dream Series is one of those places where you learn how to do that as a ball player, and you learn how that goes about your daily routine, getting your early work in, and all that kind of stuff, man. It's just, I could talk for days about this, but it's an experience for a baseball player, never mind a black person, never mind a black baseball player or a black family that you can't recreate. So MLB's done a good job with that for sure.
Yeah, agreed completely. And last thing for you here, Clinton Yates, since you don't get to talk about college baseball for hours on end and amateur baseball, even though you could on your regular platforms, anything else you want to add to Vandy baseball fans out there who are listening to this?
Let me tell y'all something about Vandy baseball. There's what's happening on the field with Tim Corbin. There's what's happening in the recruiting with all the guys that are a part of the program. Shouts to my man Christian Little. Young Buck, he's my homie. I've known him for a while. That kid can throw. But there's also what's happening on the media situation. And whoever the hell runs the Vandy Boys Instagram is a genius, because those clips are amazing, okay? They're selling that program better than anything I've ever seen. Beyond having the best baseball team, they got the best social going in the game. Drone shots on infield practice, and we're taking, you know, BP off. It's to die for. It's great work. Gotta love it.
That's awesome. Clinton, thanks so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
No doubt, man. All good.
Really enjoyed talking with Clinton Yates from ESPN's The Undefeated and Around the Horn, as well as ESPN Los Angeles. You know him from a lot of different things. I imagine many of you see him on Around the Horn regularly, and I would encourage you to check out especially what he writes about baseball on The Undefeated. His Twitter is at Clinton Yates. As simple as that. If you don't already, you should follow him. Join the party. And thanks to Clinton for joining the show. We've talked a lot about Kamar Rocker today, and he made some national kind of whisper lines, I would say, even more so than headlines. The Kylie McDaniels of the world, different folks in the prospect world, just saying Kamar Rocker's velocity is down. His velocity is down. What's going on? Moving him down draft boards. I've seen him moved as far down as fourth or fifth in some places after being first or second overall for many at the beginning of the season, third in some places. His velocity was down for starts against Missouri and LSU, both on the road in weeks 2 and 3 in SEC play. In the three starts since then, he's been completely back to normal. He's been at his best, and he was at his best and at his most efficient in his complete game win this past Friday over Mississippi State, which we broke down in detail on Monday's podcast in our series recap. I asked Rocker yesterday, as we record this podcast on Thursday, April the 29th. He was part of the Vanderbilt Zoom press conference on Wednesday the 28th before the Commodores left for Gainesville. I just wanted to get his point of view on it. Was it a dead arm phase? Whatever it was, it's over now. I just wanted to know what happened. So this is Kamar Rocker talking about his velocity going down and the national perception of that as all of it happened.
Kamar, there were a lot of national reports that your velocity had dropped for the Missouri and LSU starts. Do you know if it for a fact dropped? And if it did, do you know why?
I think it was just kind of like a mid-season hump thing. I don't think it dropped as drastically as like everyone was saying, but yeah, I think it happens during the season.
How do you react to that, or do you just kind of know it'll come back like it has the last couple weeks?
Yeah, you kind of just know for yourself. It's not really about what people say.
You missed a start last year, and then 2 years ago you had that stretch where you only pitched to one batter in a game at least over a couple of weeks. Is that kind of the same thing you've dealt with every year, and this year you were able to pitch through it?
It's something I dealt with early on when my mechanics were a little bit more poor, and then just kind of improving like my body in general is helping me get through that kind of little hump.
Have there been mechanical changes the last 2-3 weeks that have helped you get you back to where you've been?
No, more so just kind of like kind of your body agreeing with like that long season, really.
So a mid-season slump, that's what Kamar Rocker says is behind his velocity dip in a couple of road starts within the last month or so. And I thought it was interesting. You just kind of know for yourself why this is happening. Doesn't matter what people say. So Rocker's not going to be somebody who shuts himself off from the outside world. He understands what the draft talk is like. He doesn't really let it affect him on the field, but I think he knew at the time and has shown since then. All I got to do is just come back once my velocity is back and be myself, and that's exactly what he's done. I don't think it's anything to panic over. I mean, if you're going to drop him for two starts in the bad direction, well, what do you do when he's had two great starts against two of the best teams he's pitched against all year? 16 innings, just one earned run combined, and fewer than 10 base runners against Tennessee and Mississippi State over the last 2 weeks. If 2 weeks of dead arm is enough to bring him down, then are those two starts enough to bring him back up, especially while Jack Leiter has not been at his best in those two series? So who knows what goes on in the draft ranking world, but wanted to make sure we got Kamar Rocker's perspective on that. I think his voice really matters, and it may be the only one that really matters, along with his pitching coach Scott Brown, in all of this. But I think suffice to say, Rocker is back to normal. He wasn't hurt. It's nothing permanent. At least the last three starts have suggested that all those things are true. On Monday's episode, I got so into recapping the Mississippi State series win that I completely neglected to bring you a Tim Corbin quote of the week. So, in order to make up for all that, my loyal listeners of the Anchor Down podcast, whom I admire greatly, we got two Tim Corbin quotes of the week. I would never let you down. Here's the first one. This is from Monday night on ESPN 94.9. Tim Corbin comes on the coach's show every week on our air on ESPN 94.9, which is our ESPN radio second station, on the Commodore Hour with Kevin Ingram. And at the end, Kevin asked him about batting practice music choices, and we go old school with Tim Corbin for the first quote of the week.
All right, as we finish up, I wanted to ask you about the music for batting practice for the games this weekend. It's a little more hard rock, which was right up my alley, and it made me wonder, you know, when you're cruising around New Hampshire as a teenager, what do you got going on, you know, in the Camaro or whatever you're driving in?
Camaro. It was a Bronco with a plow on the front of it. We never took the plow off because if we felt like we took it off, we'd never get it back on again. So it stayed on during 80-degree summer days in New Hampshire. I say 80 because that's about as hot as it got. But Boston, REO Speedwagon, Bachman Turner Overdrive. If that was on the radio, which if I go back to my little old town in Wolfboro, New Hampshire, time hasn't changed. That's the same music you hear everywhere. So that's kind of in my blood, and sometimes we like blaring that out on those speakers.
That's great from Tim Corbin driving around with the snowplow on the front of his Bronco in Wolfboro, New Hampshire, maybe on his way to his job at Bailey's Restaurant, which I got to check out now. It's now called Morrissey's Front Porch. I got to go and tell them that I want I would like my meal prepared by Tim Corbin, but I don't think that's going to happen now. But that was great talking about Tim Corbin's music taste. He loves Boston and REO Speedwagon, which is not a big surprise. And then the second Tim Corbin quote of the week. This is another good one. Also from yesterday's press conference, I've been meaning to ask Tim Corbin about this all the year. I mentioned it on a couple of SEC Network Plus broadcasts for games early in the season. There's no more mystery DH for Vanderbilt baseball. The NCAA changed the rule. Your starting DH has to bat once unless there is a pitching change. So, no more next day's starter as the DH for the Commodores and then bringing the DH off the bench, which Vanderbilt had done pretty much as often as they possibly could, at least when the DH wasn't hitting near the top of the order. So I'd wanted Tim Corbin's reaction on it, and he gave a serious answer about why they do it and then provided us with a laugh at the end.
When did you find out that the DH rule was being changed for this season, that you couldn't start a pitcher at DH anymore and pinch hit? And what was your reaction when you found out?
When the new rules came out and the rules committee published the interpretations and so on, what was my reaction? I can see it. I mean, we started doing it years ago, and I really picked it up from Mark Markquist at Stanford because they used to do it, and it had a lot of validity, and I think it might have more internal validity than maybe external. And I say internal because what happens, Max, is when you've got three or four guys that potentially could be vie for that spot, you keep them fresh mentally before the game starts, not knowing what's going to happen. But the biggest reason we started doing it is because you get into those Tuesday and Wednesday games, and when teams whole staff a lineup, and let's just say you put a right-handed hitter in the lineup, and they start out using a left-handed pitcher, then they flip to a righty, it gave you the maneuverability at least to do something in the second inning. We always named our DH if it was in the top four spots, but if it fell below four, then we didn't. And it helped us in some years. I remember the North Carolina State Regional. It helped us a lot. We had a situation first and second. We put our best bunter up there right away, and Andrew Harris, he bunted the ball, and we took him out of the game. So it was advantageous for us, I thought, at some certain points. But I can see why you'd want to identify, the committee would want to identify that player.
Do you miss doing it?
Well, I was so used to doing it. I guess I do. It's like something... It's like my binky was taken away from me.
Tim Corbin not being able to use the mystery DH anymore is like having his binky taken away from him. God, that's a good one. So I hope those two Tim Corbin quotes of the week made up for me neglecting one on Monday. I thought both of those were great. Also, some serious thoughts coming out about what he said about the mystery DH and pinch hitting. So the first thing... the reason the rule was changed, the NCAA said they changed it to align with Major League Baseball, which is fine, and that's what Tim Corbin says. He says, yeah, I see it. Like, I get it. So in the majors, you can't do that. You can't mystery DH. The DH has to bat once, and now that's the rule in college as of this 2021 season. But what Tim Corbin was talking about with matchups, you're still allowed to pinch hit for your DH if the other team has changed pitchers before that DH bats for the first time. But... then that DH is done for the game. In the past, that DH, who maybe wasn't your first choice, but is your first choice against the second pitcher, would be batting for a pitcher. But now that DH would be batting for your initial DH, and you lose that hitter for the game without having batted them. And shout out to my partner, Andrew Harris, on SEC Network Plus for getting that bunt down against NC State. There weren't really many times where they changed it because of strategy, but like Tim Corbin said, the value was internal. They don't tell the players who it's going to be. Sometimes only Tim Corbin knows. The other coaches might not even know. So it's four or five guys who it could be, and they're all getting ready like they're preparing to play. And, I mean, whether or not you tell everyone practice and take BP like you're going to be in there, I don't think you can truly change that unless they think there's actually a chance they play. So maybe there is value there, but sadly, no more mystery DH for Vandy. And you got to wonder, did somebody say something? Did somebody say something to the NCAA? The Anchor Down Podcast snitch line is happily open if anybody out there has any information about why the DH rule that literally only affects Vanderbilt changed. Pretty funny stuff. We got an exciting episode coming your way on Monday. It is partially recorded now. Be out on full sometime on Monday for our first episode in May. Talking to some Vanderbilt baseball former players who are now in the minor leagues, and the minor leagues are finally back next week after over a full year off. Did not play last year because of COVID, which may or may not already be ridiculous enough, depending on where you come down on that. And now this year, pushed back a month because Major League Baseball said so, basically. The entire realignment of the minors has changed. Players are popping up in different places. A lot of teams are gone. A lot of leagues are gone or have changed geographically, things like that. So we're going to be talking to some guys who have been affected in different ways by that. So looking forward to bringing you that episode on Monday. You can subscribe to the Anchor Down podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. If you're a Vanderbilt baseball fan and you don't already subscribe, you should. We cover the Vandy boys year-round the way it should be done. All the episodes are free and on demand on those podcast platforms. Thanks so much to Clinton Yates from ESPN and the Undefeated for joining the podcast. Really enjoyed talking to him. And I will talk to you on Monday after Vanderbilt baseball plays 3 on the road at Florida. You've been anchoring down and listening up with me, Max Herz. This is the Anchor Down podcast on ESPN 102.5 The Game.